This is episode 353. My name is Vidal, and this is The Journey, a conversation on leadership, culture, and creativity. Today is Thursday, April 4th, and I want to thank you guys for taking the time to engage with us on a conversation that involves topics that we consider relevant, and we enjoy having a conversation over some of these issues happening today. Some of you know that I'm a big sports guy. I love sports, most sports. I am not knowledgeable in all of them, but I do enjoy watching, and whenever I get a chance to participate, one of the iconic figures in our time in recent weeks announced his retirement. I'm speaking of the martial artist Conor McGregor, the Irish fighter, an amazing, amazing fighter. And his retirement called my attention for multiple reasons. But one of the things that he made me think about when he announced his retirement was some of the misconceptions that we have in today's views and worldviews and experiences in life. Not about him, but the misconceptions regarding, religion, Christianity, Jesus, God in particularly. And I'll tell you, one of the most challenging things that I see in today's culture among Christians and non-Christians, people in general, is the concept of the understanding of sanitizing God. And when I use the word sanitize, I'm speaking of creating some sort of a dualism that is typically presented and promoted by Hollywood, by media, by culture today. And I'm speaking of Conor McGregor because this dualism is kind of the struggle or the view of evil and goodness. Evil and, I guess, Satan and God. That's just a non-biblical misconception of how we sanitize and the God, the character of God, the person of God. Because in my mind, when I think of what Hollywood has done of bringing this dualism, that the fight is between God and Satan, it's like you putting me in the octagon, although he's retired. But if you were to put me, with this 30-year-old Irish fighter, and you'll say, go ahead and fight him, I can assure you that will not be much of a fight. There's not comparison. So kind of the same deal, kind of the same thing that I see when we get this misconception, misunderstanding of God fighting Satan, the reality that there is no comparison. There is no way to put anyone on a quote-unquote octagon with God. God stands on a very unique and category on its own. I mean, there is no one like God. And because of this romanticized view of this, again, this kind of a dualism, then I feel that we move into a second misconception. And the second misconception is a view of romanticism over God and Christianity. I think this is where the prosperity gospel, this nonsense of messages and preaching and teaching over this concept of, again, evil and suffering, this whole sanitized view of God, typically over promises and under delivers. And why? Well, again, because it puts God in a context of romanticism, that if you put your faith in Jesus, nothing is going to happen to you. If you trust God, you're going to be prosperous. But the reality is that the prosperity gospel, or this kind of a distorted message of God, is true, but it will become a true reality after you die. In other words, this is the concept of the understanding that the promises of the prosperity gospel today, of this romanticized view of life in Christianity, is only true until you die. But before you die, while you are on this earth, while we are facing the reality of a life that is ruled and controlled by the prince of the air, in a world that is broken, and the brokenness affects us, affects all of us, the reality is that we believe that we have been placed, those who profess faith in Jesus Christ, in a broken context, so we can portray, we can convey, we can show to the world that individuals as broken as you and I are, we are able to display the beauty, the majesty, the power of God in the midst of our brokenness, in spite of our brokenness, for the sake of simply reminding that there is no dualism, that there is no romanticized view of Christianity. The reality is that God is supreme, God is sovereign, and those who put their trust in Jesus, those who are willing and able to trust the trustworthiness of God in the middle of, again, craziness and brokenness and dysfunctionality, and even in the midst of death, in the midst of the irreversible, those are the experiences where at the end of the conversation, the sovereignty, the power, the might, the character of God is displayed. And that's part of why we need to definitely spend some time speaking about this. Now, we have been dissecting Philippians in the chapter 1. We went through these verses for the last 5 weeks on Sunday morning. Many of you know that I'm a pastor. I pastor First Baptist Church in the beautiful city of Far. And that allows me and gives me the opportunity to convey this message. In chapter 1 of the book of Philippians, we read previously when Paul made the assertion that for him to live is Christ and to die is gain. So the importance of life and death through the lenses of Paul, again, being incarcerated, facing opposition. So please translate what everything that you said regarding the romanticized view of Christianity or the sanitized view of God, and how those things impact the way we perceive opposition today. Someone who experienced the depth of opposition, someone who is in the middle of a very difficult scenario, which is, again, being incarcerated, speaks on verse 28 and says, without being frightened in any way by those who oppose you, this is Philippians 1, verse 28, this is a sign to them, meaning them as in the opposition, that they will be destroyed, but that you will be saved in that by God. So again, this is a huge, huge statement by Paul, because opposition, it's a reality. Opposition is part of what makes us who we are. And I'm just reminded that when it comes to Jesus, for instance, just coming back to Jesus, it was in the context of opposition or suffering, if you want to use that kind of a terminology back and forth and interchangeably put him as a synonym, is the understanding that through that opposition, through that suffering for Jesus, based on in the Old Testament, based on the fact that Isaiah 53 portrays and gives us not only just a servant, but specifically a suffering servant, which, by the way, for the Jewish community, which is part of the audience that Paul is writing to, this church is in Philippi, this church is in this province of Asia, it's really offensive. For the Jewish community, suffering servant is offensive. And if you are a Jew in this time in history, oh my goodness, the last thing that you need is another Jew who is suffering. So for some of us, as we read verses like this, for some of us that we go through life and we might be facing some of the most difficult opposition, some of the most difficult suffering and things that we never thought we will ever experience, I can understand why prosperity gospel, romanticized view, sanitized view of God is attractive. Because the last thing that we need is more suffering. The last thing that we need is the concept of facing more opposition. Well, the reality is that, again, a lot of what I'm describing this morning, a lot of what Paul is writing, personally, there's a component of mystery. There's a component that I don't fully understand why evil takes place, why opposition takes place. I'll be honest with you. A lot of this is self-inflicted. So I do not want to take anything away from our responsibility and our accountability, that we need to stop making these unnecessary and these crazy decisions and lifestyles that brings us into our own demise, our own detrimental experiences. But besides that, besides the craziness of life, Paul is basically just staying and bringing the church back into the understanding that the concept of frighten or fear is something that he is commanding the church to stop doing, because the church was already frightened. Because the reality is that the churches are not only broken and dysfunctional 2,000 years ago, and some things have not changed, obviously, after 2,000 years, we're still the same in many of these regards, but you have so many groups, so many philosophies, so many just behaviors that they have been a threat to the church throughout history. And Paul basically says, without being frightened. In other words, Paul is not over-promising that the opposition is going to be dissipated, that the opposition is going to go away. That's not what he's saying. What he's saying is simply, as opposition rises, our call, our command, our trusting in God in the midst of craziness and brokenness and opposition is to dissipate not the opposition, but the fear. Now, how do you do that? That's the question that we want to kind of just look into this, view of Philippians 1:28. The first thing that we need to do, or we need to stop doing, if we want to dissipate and remove fear, is literally to stop romanticizing God and sanitizing God in Christianity. We have to understand that opposition is real, once again, but we filter opposition through the character of God. We do not filter opposition through our own understanding, through our own rationale, although it does involve our rationalization of things, and we must know what is it that we're doing and why we're doing it, what is it that we're believing and why we're trusting, why we're believing in God. But here's the worldview of the scriptures when it comes to those who oppose you, oppose us, because the you is typically plural. It's not just individual. Personal, but it's communal. Paul says this is a sign to them, to those who oppose you. This is the sign that they will be destroyed. The concept of a sign, or the context of what we're describing, is certainty. In other words, the destruction of those who oppose God, which means oppose us, is literally destruction. That's the certainty of the situation. Now, the reality of today may be completely uncertain, may be perceived and felt as uncertain. The reality of a doctor's, diagnose, or maybe the reality of a relationship that is very fragile and it hurts and it's painful, it may be uncertain, perceived as uncertain. But Paul is saying, let me tell you that we as Christians, we do not fight towards victory. We do not face opposition with the wishful thinking, with the desire to hopefully, get a victory at the end. Paul is reminding each and every one of us that when we face opposition, when we move towards the removal of fear, which is obviously the antidote of faith, he's saying we do those things because of what has taken place, not because of the things that we hope and wish and pray will happen. What is it that has taken place? Again, this is the guy that on Acts 9, he was on the road to Damascus, and the one that he encountered wasn't simply just another preacher, another explanation of the law, somebody that tried to bring him into a brand new understanding. He was confronted, he faced the resurrected Christ. What's the point? That the removal of fear and the sign and the certainty of destruction is based on the resurrection of Jesus Christ, that he is alive, that he is not someone that is hoping to change the world for a better condition. This is the God of the scriptures made flesh, that he dwell among us, and that the Father, through the Son, he chose to preserve the Son by bringing him among the dead, from the dead, on that first day of the week. Well, the sign of destruction, again, is the first thing that we need to be reminded. The second thing that he says is that kind of a comparison or some sort of a parallelism. He says, but not only that we have the certainty of destruction for those individuals, for the opposition, but also that you who are willing to trust the trustworthiness of God and to understand that you do not romanticize nor you sanitize God. The understanding that the issue is not simply the opposition, but is the issue that you have made an idol of opposition by fearing opposition versus fearing God. Now you got to be reminded that you will be also saved. The concept of salvation in the Old Testament, we have said this many times, is literally physical deliverance. Is literally the understanding for Old Testament people, which in this case, the audience of Paul, as it was the audience of Jesus in the New Testament. Those are men and women who their Bible was the Old Testament. So their worldview has to do with physical deliverance. Obviously, through the progressiveness of the revelation of God, meaning through the completion of the Bible, we understand in the New Testament that it also includes the restoration, the salvation of our souls. The concept of the afterlife is also included. But at the end of the day, the concept of salvation is something that we have to understand, that Paul translates this concept as a plural communal experience. Yes, the trusting in the trustworthiness of Jesus is personal, But what brings into the picture is the need for community. So the salvation component is always bringing us into the understanding that God saved you to save many, that God wants to deliver you to deliver many, that God is not just blessing you, He's blessing others by blessing you so you can bless others. So again, the concept that you will be saved is a fearless testimony that this specific brother, this specific leader, pastor, apostle, he's writing from a context of opposition because he's incarcerated, because the church is in a lot of turmoil. The church is going through a lot of persecution in this time in history. And he reminds them that all of the knowledge, all of the understanding that you have of the scriptures of God must be presented through a fearless testimony, through the understanding that it has to be portrayed. Your salvation has to be portrayed as a lifestyle. Now, this beautiful lifestyle that Paul is portraying, Paul is conveying to the church that the church must follow, is based on this narrative that you read on verse 28. At the end of verse 28, not only that he is, again, commanding the church to remove fear without being frightened in any way by those who oppose you, and then he goes into this whole certainty, the sign that they will be destroyed in due time. Obviously, speaking of the return of Jesus, Jesus comes back, the consummation of the kingdom. But also he says, you will be saved. Now listen to the latter part. This is the beauty of the gospel, the centrality of Jesus Christ. This is how you avoid the romanticism and the sanitizing of God in Christianity. Paul says, and that, what is it that? The whole presentation, the whole thing that we just described, that is done by God. So I'm going to say this one more time. Because it's done by God, that is God, is done by God, this is why you and I do not fight, do not face opposition towards getting a victory. We do it from a victory. So what does that mean? Again, what do we do with this whole concept that is done by God? Well, unavoidably, you begin by understanding that is by faith. You have to trust in the trustworthiness of God. So as you hear my voice this morning, as you hear this podcast, some of us may be in a place where the opposition is not only real, it's tangible, it's overwhelming. It has taken a toll of our lives. And you may be facing a reality where emotionally, mentally, physically, maybe financially, maybe relationally, you feel or you are defeated. Hear me say this. For you to have the ability to trust, to put your trust, your faith in the trustworthiness of God, that is a gift that comes from God. So the prayer must be, allow me, God, give me the ability to trust that as I face, as I encounter the opposition today, whatever that may be, and it might even be something as real as internal opposition, that you're fighting your very own disbelief, you're fighting your very own, regrets or past experiences, the consequences of previous decisions that we made, that I made, that you made, whatever the case may be, hear me say this, faith is having the ability to trust the trustworthiness of Jesus Christ, that what he has done is more than enough, but that in itself is a gift. So I'm going to say this one more time. Please do not fall into the romanticism or the sanitizing of God. You have to understand that faith is not something that just comes from you, but it comes through you. Faith is simply the ability to embrace the lifestyle of Jesus, that whatever Jesus did and however Jesus dealt with opposition, that's how we do it. And that is a gift of God. So that has to flourish, again, into a fearless testimony and a lifestyle that reflects that in the midst of opposition, in the midst of brokenness, in the midst of a doctor's, again, report, in the midst of the pain of losing a loved one, when you are facing the irreversible, that's when you and I trust that God is not only going to keep you and give you the ability to persevere and to continue, which this brother did and is doing right now as he is writing verse 28 and the following verses, but is also understanding that if or since you will continue and you will face the opposition and you will see the destruction of the enemy and you will experience the salvation of God, is because God has chosen to preserve you. God has chosen through Jesus Christ to do exactly what he did with him, 2,000 years ago, the first day of the week, when things were irreversible, when things were helpless, and no one on the face of the earth was able to trust the words of Jesus, the miracles of Jesus, the life of Jesus, the Father, through his mercy, sovereignty, again, just going back to the providence of God, going back to the power of God, he conquered death through the righteousness of Jesus, through the lifestyle of Jesus. The approval of the Father is that he brings the Son and Jesus Christ from the grave and brings it back into the reality of his restoration as the sovereign cosmic God of the universe. That is who we trust, that is who we worship, and that's who we proclaim as the God who preserves, and he promises, and he fulfills every one of those promises. So this morning, my prayer, my heart's desire, is that you will experience not only the perseverance in your life, but your perseverance draws you, brings you into the exaltation of the God who has chosen to preserve you. If you are facing a difficult situation this morning, I pray and I ask the Lord Jesus Christ to strengthen you and to be reminded that you and I will be without fear, that you and I will face the opposition, whatever that may be, and that experience, that encounter, will be the certainty, the sign that there is a time, there's a point in human history where all that will be destroyed in Jesus' name.